Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, John, everyone.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey.
Mr. Gifford, beautiful background you have there.
That's Eastern Oregon. It's trying to remember what the Steens Mountain.
You might get the award today for the best background.
Well, courtesy of OPB.
Oh, okay.
A month or two ago, they offered a whole palette of background photographs from around Oregon, and I snagged a few of them and just keep them in a library when I want something, just to take me away.
Mm-hmm. Calgon, take me away.
Love hey, John LaGarza. We didn't get the newest agenda, so we may need to follow your agenda because I don't have it on my other screen.
Okay. Sorry about that, Chair Lamont.
Well, if you just keep guiding me when we need a.
Yeah, it's a rather short meeting today. So, Commissioner Insights, and then Lynn Wallace. Bridget emailed she didn't have an update for today.
Okay.
And then we have the Washington County Business Recovery discussion and then discussion on final report, but happy to guide you along there.
Okay, great.
Good morning, everyone.
So, John, shall I just take that as because of Commissioner Insights, it'll be a short meeting?
That was a subtle hint.
We'll find something to talk about.
Don.
Mr. Chairman, move your chair.
Heck, I don't have any insight. What the heck are you talking about?
You guys have plenty. Been really busy, so thank you for everything. Lynn, you had a question. I think I heard you in there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Some other people are having trouble with getting into the meeting, and I just had some type of technical that bumped me out. I don't have any visual. So I'm going to have to leave the meeting and come back in another way, I think. So, bye. I'll be back.
We'll wait for you.
Sounds like General MacArthur. Morning, Cindy.
Actually, that's
Morning,
I shall.
Morning, Chair Lamont. How are you?
Good.
John, that's I shall return.
That's right. I forgot the shall.
I all forgot about Arnold.
Yeah, I'll be back.
That's the modern day update.
Yep.
Yeah.
I apologize for having my ugly face up there, but I'm eating breakfast and we better not to watch this.
Okay.
Oh, bless you, William.
Yeah. Always thinking of you, Ken.
And we have John Southgate today. Oh, boy, this is a special day. We can't see him, but we see his name. So, John LaGarza, should we get rolling?
Sounds good, Chair Lamont.
All right. Well, let's open it up with the first agenda item. John LaGarza is going to guide me on the agenda. Hi, John Southgate.
We have, two guest presenters from Washington County on the Business Recovery Center today, John Southgate and Nancy Lopez, who are working out there with Washington County in the Hillsborough Chamber. We were first, Chair Lamont, going to be having an update from Lynn Wallace, but she's working on getting back on, so maybe we can skip down to the commissioner updates and start there, and then once Lynn gets on, we can jump back to her, and then go down to the next item would be the presentation from on the Washington County Business Recovery Centers.
Great. Well, let's go to Commissioner Savas. Start with him this morning.
Sure. Well, welcome everyone. Interesting times with the fires and COVID. Some information I have for you today. Maybe the easy one is that to talk about. The conversation on tolling seems to be expanding and somewhat spreading. Initially, when I inquired about the metro tolling, I was told it was vehicle miles traveled, which is something I support. But it turns out that it's actual toll virtually everything within the metro region kind of a study. So coupled with that, ODOT's doing a heck of a public outreach program right now. So they're all over doing the I-205, I-5 tolling study outreach. We have a couple committees that are working hard on it, technical and stakeholder committees as far as electeds that are involved in the area, particularly most affected Oregon City and West Lynn. So we're working hard on that. And also trying to get I-205 built and encourage somehow either the legislature or the OTC, the Oregon Transportation Commission, to find the funding to get that project. The 60% design will be reached at the, you know, within a month or two. So we'll have, as far as they can go, the design done, and the remainder of the design will be build construction. So they need to have the funding for that next step. And so they'll be doing the last portion of that while they're doing the construction planning. So we're hoping to get that kickstarted amongst all of this. So it's getting kind of confusing because there's two types of tolling ODOT's looking at. I mentioned this before, and one is tolling the conventional way to pay for a structure like a bridge, and then when the bond is defeased, the toll goes away. Well, what's really taking place is called value pricing or congestion pricing or variable pricing, in which the based on the congestion, the toll will go up. And now they're expanding the look at the, and there'll be a, there's a map that's got released last week by ODOT. That's why this is kind of a big deal, and as it spreads, there can be a lot of rumors around there, but the map got expanded beyond I-205 and I-5, by the way, to virtually every major highway in the region, like Highway 26, 84, 217, so on and so on. So while that's happening, Metro's doing this toll everything study, which probably could even include the street in front of your home. And there's no public involvement outreach that I'm aware of for that. And that's why it's been on the quiet. So just to be aware, the issue that I raised at JPAC, with Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation on Thursday was, because as Metro's rolling out this, we're going to be ready in 2 months with this plan, it'll be completed. And we're trying to encourage change of behavior. And I go, if that's the goal, then how do you, in Clackamas County, how do you encourage people to change their behavior? There's no alternative to get to work. So that was discussed at length, and it was a welcomed conversation. And I think a conversation to continue. But I think the part that is, to me, which is a little bit disturbing, is that ODOT's doing a considerable amount of outreach and Metro's doing very little. So maybe there's another step where they do that. I don't know, but a lot at stake there. The last thing I will I wanted to talk about is that, and related, kind of a little bit of a pivot here, but not too much of a pivot, is that our transit study. I encouraged the region or TriMet to do a transit study for the entire region, and they declined. So I encouraged our staff to look at it. We got our transit study underway. That will be completed in the next couple months as well, probably by December, the latest. And that's going to show a study of the entire TriMet portion of Clackamas County, as well as the unincorporated areas that are in the urban area that don't have any coverage whatsoever. Employers pay the TriMet tax. And there have been employers or parts of the region in which they paid the tax and never had any transit whatsoever anywhere nearby. And about 10 years ago, that encouraged the community of Boring to apply for withdrawal, which was ultimately granted because TriMet could not justify. And that's really how our transit districts got formed. But the most important thing that I keep on getting back from TriMet, aside from the bad news, is that Commissioner Savis, there's not going to be any new transit in Clackamas County. We can't afford it. We don't have the money. And by the way, you're really not generating that much income or revenue, which gets back to employment or jobs or employment lands. And we had a little bit of inventory at the county of employment lands, pretty well all been gobbled up in this expansion of the economy, which is good. We got a lot of our employment lands now occupied. Construction is either underway or completed, and we have businesses in there, and things are happening, things are moving. Don't know the depth of the recession, but the point of the matter is that if we start, as we use these housing dollars to build the housing by virtue of the bond and all the money that's in that pipeline, the concern I've got is that if we don't, we keep on increasing our population and we don't keep on increasing the number of jobs to match that population, we're going to be even a greater bedroom community than we were before. Less transit revenue, because transit revenue is based on jobs, no employment, no growing the population, but no growing jobs. It's a recipe for, there's no financial support ever for transit. So you're just get used to paying tolls. So it's all ties together. And I said a lot, but I'll stop there. You asked for insights. There's a couple.
Well, I think I just want to add to the tolling discussion. We got a draft letter from Wilsonville City Council asking Lake Oswego to sign on. They're trying to get other signatures in there, asking ODOT to be, like you're saying, more robust in the outreach to everybody and to really, really model the potential for hitting our side streets and our side roads if tolling comes, and kind of having to flip the discussion so that they would go full tolling as one option, because they were pinching it down to just the Clackamas County section and doing a partial tolling, which I just can't get that through my mind. But a lot of the information from the Wilsonville letter came from the Clackamas County Board. So thank you both. And it was really just trying to put them on alert that they need to be more comprehensive and not just think of parts and pieces.
Chair Lamont, I have some questions.
William, go ahead.
Commissioner Savis, 2 points. One is, when you're talking about industrial lands being gobbled up, I hope that that's all, in Clackamas County, I hope that's also taking in consideration Metro's eyes of plans on opening another transfer station, because the one in Oregon City is not big enough. They're thinking about taking some of our industrial lands and putting in an additional one. That's not yet been decided, but it concerns me, and I hope that it's on the commission's radar. Second thing is that when the traffic studies are being done, I hope that there is some sort of factoring in of the decrease in commuting that COVID has taught people about working from home and schooling from home. So there's a real possibility the traffic will decrease significantly, and that should impact our planning, because I see that as a trend that's here and this probably will stay.
Yeah, I do too expect a change in behavior with regards to virtual meetings and people moving less. But if you've been out there driving lately, you'll see that people are saying it's almost back to the way it was right now. So, and we got to realize that as we remain a hot economy and we keep on growing, that's something that we still have an undersized transportation system. It is undersized. We need to right size it and then toll it, in my opinion. I mean, not that I want to toll it, period. I just want to just clarify that. But if they're going to toll it, right size it first.
Okay. Commissioner Hubbardson.
Yeah, just touching on Commissioner Savis's comments, I don't support tolling with the reluctant exception of, unless they do it from bridge to bridge on 5 and 205, and that every single access to the freeway is tolled, I don't support it, because it just puts the entire burden for a major project, which is the 205 expansion, on just Clackamas County. And that's simply not fair on something that is a regional asset. So that's kind of where I'm at. And I probably don't share the idea that telecommuting and things are going to make much difference in transportation, because quite frankly, we're expecting another 1 million people in this region over the next 10 years. So even though you might have a small percentage of people that do stay home and work from home, with the increase in people coming to the region, Paul's absolutely correct. We have to right size the transportation system as a whole. You go out and drive right now, you're going to find that the traffic is almost like it was 8 months ago. So, and the other aspect of it is a lot of people that are having to educate their children at home at the moment. It's not preferable, and the burden falls unfairly on women for the most part, many of whom would prefer to go back to work to their jobs. And so I think you're going to see that as soon as schools can get into a situation where they can go back to traditional education, that to a large degree that's going to happen, which will put women driving to work, just like men drive to work, back on the road. So I don't see it changing that much in terms of traffic. We do need to right-size the system. Much of my focus for the last couple of weeks, as has been the case for the rest of the commission, has been on the fires. Personally, I continue to deliver food out to the senior centers in Sandy, Hoodview, and Estacada. I got to tell you, it's been incredible to see the outpouring of support by citizens for the firefighters and the volunteers. It's been and to help the evacuees. It's been incredible to see. It makes you particularly proud to be I call it a Clackamaniac.
I love that.
Actually, I don't have a lot to report on in terms of EDC today. I actually wanted to hear from John LaGarza and Cindy Moore on a couple of issues that have to do with the ISP. I know that we are applying for a grant to work with SandyNet on a project, and then I shared some information about a possible project for the CBX in Sherwood, which would be a moneymaker for our CBX program. So I don't know if they have anything to report on that, but I do continue to pursue that and certainly hope that that we are doing so at the staff level.
John or Cindy, you want to jump in on that?
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No worries. I can circle back with Duke. If I'm understanding you correctly, this is for the letter of support that we submitted for the broadband expansion?
Yes.
Yes, I can certainly circle back with Duke and provide an update for you, Commissioner.
Good. I think you might want to include all the members of the EDC on that so they know, you know, how that project is progressing.
Most certainly will do.
Okay.
John, anything to add?
No, that, you know, Cindy's absolutely right. We've, you know, the EDC, thank you, the Executive Committee and Commissioner Humberson and Commissioner Savitz, we did provide them a letter of support. I know Duke was working with the EDA to submit that application, and we'll get an update from him. You know, the EDA can take a little bit of time, but we'll get an understanding of the timeline and report that back to everyone here.
The OCBA also submitted a letter of support.
That's great. That's great. Great to hear from our communities.
I have a question.
Yes, Lisa.
I'm wondering if we've heard anything about moving from level one with the COVID-related situation for the state. Any news on that?
None.
I'm happy just to chime in real quickly and say that the numbers right now seem to be expanding, going the wrong direction. What we feared about the holiday, Labor Day, is coming to the numbers. So if you look at the numbers and the trends, we're headed the wrong way.
It's unfortunate, but it's unfortunate that they politicized something that should be strictly related to healthcare. But that's part of what has interfered with the kind of progress we could have been making, frankly.
Okay. John, next on the list.
I see Lynn Wallace has joined us. Lynn, if you want to give us a quick update, and then we'll, after that, John, we'll jump to Washington County update.
Okay.
Will do.
Morning, Lynn.
Good morning. Let me... slideshow. Okay, so I'm not set up slideshow, custom slideshow from beginning. Okay, can everybody see that? Okay, the first slide.
Not yet.
Nothing's up.
Okay, so let me display settings. There we go. How is that?
No, we need to share screen, Lynn.
Yeah, I did that. Let me do
it. Try it again.
Yeah. Okay. I shared screen. Okay.
There we go.
All right. Okay, I'm having to work on my little laptop here because my something went wrong from the getting. Slideshow. Beginning. There we go. How's that?
Great.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to just talk a little bit. I have 10 slides, so I'll run through them pretty quickly. John, do you think I have about 10 minutes or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, John LaGarza? Yeah.
Okay, so the unemployment rate is looking really good. It's continued to improve during the last 4 months. From the latest July to August, the rate fell from 10.2 in July to now it is 7.7%. And it means that there were little over 22,000 unemployed residents in July. Currently, there are 16,458. So that means that since the pandemic, the unemployment rate has dropped by 6.4% percentage points. And the number of residents who were unemployed has decreased by 13,693. So when we look at claims, they've kind of upticked in September. They went up to 590 claims. During the last 27 weeks now, we've had a total of a little over 42,000 regular UI claims filed in Clackamas County. And that's filed by Clackamas County residents.
Isn't there normally some seasonal fluctuation?
I haven't checked that out, but as my memory serves me, that really doesn't impact month to month or week to week, because it's mainly week to week. So I'm getting back. I had previous, like before March 21st, but it was just the graph was getting too busy. So, but looking back in time, it really doesn't make all that much difference. Or it doesn't seem to. But I haven't gone back years and years. I've just gone back a couple years. So continued claims, and that's what we're looking at here, is week-to-week claimants. Claimants need to claim every week. And the continued claims fell by almost 4,000 or 27% from July to August. So we're having definitely a trend of less and less continuing claims, week to week claims. And these are our latest claim, the payments. In August, there were $59 million paid out to Clackamas County residents, their UI claims. This isn't PUA, this is just regular UI payments, including the CARES Act. And this was a drop of over $40 million in benefits from the previous month of July. And I think mostly, I'm guessing here, but I'm if I had to have an educated, give an educated guess, it's probably most due to the ending of the CARES Act and that $600 payment per week. So since April, the state has paid out over $391 million of UI benefits to Clackamas County residents. So we did have some job gains in August, a total of 600 net new jobs. And we're ending up with an employment level now of almost 151,000. The county has now added back a net total of 3,100, or 16% of the jobs that were lost in March, April, when the pandemic hit. And it's just still hard to predict how even or uneven this recovery is going to be for the county. So, let's see here. Since April. So these are, since April, April to August, these are the industries that have both added and lost jobs. Hospitality has added back the largest number, over 4,000, followed by construction, retail trade, and other services. Federal government is also a positive input to the net gain of jobs. Local government continues, mainly local education, continues to lose jobs, over 3,000, followed by manufacturing and health services. I'm a little concerned about so many manufacturing jobs being lost and have not recovered very quickly. So kind of keeping an eye on that to see what's going to happen, because we're not the only area or region that is seeing this. I looked at Help Wanted online ads and to see what the trend was. We have a company that we subscribe to that captures unduplicated online help ads, which kind of capture the majority of job openings. And this is for the Portland MSA area. And you can see at the very end there, the total ads reached, that's the top line, the blue line, reached over 41,000. That's capturing all the ads. And then the new ads for July, August, they reached almost 20,000. So there is an uptick just recently. And you can see where the ads fell quite alarmingly. And now they're going the other direction. So we'll see what happens next month. And this is our GIS folks. They kind of looked at the jobs, how many jobs were located in the evacuation zones. Now this is dated. This is as of September 11th. I was trying to get updated information, but it just didn't come through soon enough to share with you guys. But so you can see where Clackamas County is, you know, so much higher, so many more jobs in their zones. So you can think back in time what was happening, you know, on September 11th. I believe that's when most of the evacuations were occurring. This captures evacuations 1, 2, and 3, all of them.
Hey, Lynn, I might just be me, but the bottom of that screen is cut off, so I can't see any numbers. Can you read those out loud?
Oh, so you guys aren't seeing the full screen, huh?
No, we can't see those numbers.
We haven't seen the bottom of the screen on all of the charts.
Oh, really? I am seeing it, so I don't have no idea. Let's see here. Any way I can make it bigger?
Make it smaller.
Yeah, make it smaller or just read them off.
Okay, I don't know how to make it smaller, but so I'll read them off. Okay, the dark brown, those are jobs, and these are ranges. They put them into ranges. The dark brown is 40,000 to 166,000, and that captures just Clackamas County on September 11th. And then the orange, the dark orange is 6,000 to 39,999 jobs. And then the lighter orange is 1,000 to 5,999. The gold is 1 to 999 jobs. And the rest of the area wasn't affected.
Wow.
But I wanted to get, you know, like, later data, and she said she'd try. It's kind of time consuming to get this together because you're dealing with all the counties, so it didn't happen. But I thought this was great having something like this. Okay, so the last slide for that same period really two periods, September 11th. Now, how much can you see of the screen? Can you see the business establishments and jobs line?
Yes.
You see the graph. Okay, good. Okay, so this is Clackamas County business establishments and jobs in the wildfire evacuation zones. So the first blue bar for September 11th, there were over 15,000 businesses that were affected by evacuations, that were in evacuation zones. And then in September, by the time, a week later, 6 days later, there were only 1,678 in the evacuation. And then to the right, the blue bar, September 11th, there were almost 166,000 jobs that were within all evacuation zones. And then the following week, September 17th, that fell 1,267. So this isn't really exact because we had to use, 2019 QCEW data, but it's close enough. And I think it's really great showing what we can do with our GIS staff and what they can do. With all kinds of maps and pictorials. And that is it. Any questions?
Lynn, I've got a quick one. When you go, and then not to go back in your slideshow, but if you want to go full screen. When you had mentioned there was 4,000 plus new jobs in leisure and entertainment, I think, or in hospitality, is there any kind of a percentage that we know, and maybe this is a Cindy and John number, of restoring our hospitality industry, knowing how far down we went, how big it is for Clackamas County, are we getting better and better or still struggling when you look at the total jobs overall?
I think because that that industry fell the most, it's recovering the most. And so it's a kind of a judgment call, you know, whether is it recovering fast enough? Is it, you know, I don't know, but it is recovering. And it seems to be adding jobs each month.
So slow but sure. It's not like it's completely restored or anything. It's
no,
slow. But
no, it is. It is really not down restored. Heavy. No, no. And when we've lost some businesses in that industry.
Yeah.
So that's really affecting the jobs too.
Okay. Any other questions?
Lynn? Just curious, Lynn. Are you going to be attending Portland State's census workshops? They're going to be having three of them. One starts this morning. If you're not signed up, they're already full.
Yeah, I have in the past. I have in previous years, but I'm not.
This is their first virtual one. It seems to me as though there could be some good information for all of us, but
yeah,
I waited too long and had some other commitments. So
I keep up on all their classes, and yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Thank you.
Then I just had a question about the educational jobs. I don't know if you know what. That's surprising that we still have a loss in those areas with schools back, or is this more seasonal?
You know, I think some might be seasonal. So keep in mind, this was, you know, we're always a month behind when we're talking about employment numbers. For me, you know, there's a lag time. So this was August. So I'm expecting it to really improve next month, next September. Thank you. And by the way, we will be finally getting our second quarter 2020 covered payroll employment and firm and employment and payroll records. So that will give us another piece of the puzzle, a bigger picture.
Great.
That won't be until about the October 8th or 9th, I believe.
If no other questions, Lynn, as always.
Really I do have one, John.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, so that not this slide, Lynn, but the last slide of your show there that you just had up. If I'm interpreting that correctly, can I presume that that's approximately 10 jobs per business?
Good question.
I want to make sure I'm interpreting what that slide means, but I'm just roughly about, it looks like about 9-10 jobs per business. Is that correct?
No, you can't, because, you know, businesses, you know, some businesses have one employee, some have 20.
Right. Yeah, I'm just saying on an average, it looks like about, if you were to average that out, I'm interpreting that. So a business establishment, we'll multiply that times 10, that 15,000, you end up with 150,000. So I'm just want to make sure I'm interpreting the chart correctly.
Yeah.
But as far as averaging, that would be a little precarious to do. I mean, I wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn. John LaGarza, what's next on the lineup?
Yes, thank you, Chair Lamont. We have a couple special guests here today to talk about the Washington County business recovery. John Southgate, who's an economic development manager for Washington County, and Nancy Lopez, who does a business outreach director for the Hillsborough Chamber. And so with that, Chair Lamont, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. John or Nancy, whoever wants to go first, welcome and thanks for coming over and talking to us. We want to learn some things. So whichever way you want to start.
Yeah, I think we did this yesterday with the EDP. I think I'll kind of frame it and talk about actually several initiatives that Washington County has taken on in response to the pandemic. And then Nancy, who's just a top-notch BRC staff in Hillsborough, she'll tell you what the real work entails. And let me first of all say hello, lots of friends on this call here. I had the pleasure of working with a number of you not too long ago with Clackamas County, and I'm now the interim ECDEV manager for Washington County. Washington County, unlike Clackamas County, and I think this is a nod to Clackamas County having its act together, Washington County's never had its own staff, ECDEV staff, and relied on the cities. We don't have an EDC. So about a year ago, the county started looking at introducing its own economic development staff. So I'm sort of holding down the fort while they go through the process of hiring a full-time permanent person. So if you know anybody, there's going to be a job opening actually pretty imminently. I'll also say, just by way of introduction, when I did my initial analysis of whether or not the county should have economic development, I pointed to Clackamas County as a good example in a number of ways. And to me, the top of that list is the coordination and collaboration with the cities. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but Clackamas County really does it right. So, you know, keep it up. That said, the topic today is CARES Act and the business recovery centers, but I wanted to frame it by talking about some of the other things we're doing. So as many of you probably know, Washington County, because it has more than 500,000 people, got its own allocation of CARES Act. And needless to say, that places us at an advantage because we didn't have to rely on the state of Oregon. We have our own allocation. And not to take anything away from the state of Oregon, we have great relations with people like Brian Guinea, whom I'm sure most of you know, but we got our own allocation and the board devoted a fair amount of his dollars to non-economic recovery items such as rent assistance and healthcare support, a number of other items. But they did allocate, depending on how you slice it, $15 to $20 million for business recovery. And so what we did, working through the roundtable, much like your EDP, much like your ECDEV staff, we worked closely with our cities to come up with a set of programs. How should we spend those dollars? And I should also mention our roundtable, our Economic Development Partnership, we had initially talked about maybe meeting once every couple months or so. Well, when COVID hit, we've been meeting almost weekly because there's been a lot to do. We've been coordinating our efforts, learning from each other. So I stress that the roundtable is a key part of what we've been doing. So really quickly, and then I want to land on the BRCs and turn it over to Nancy. What we did was, not necessarily in this order, the largest pot of money, $10 million, goes to small business grant programs. And what the county decided to do was give most of those dollars, $7 million of the 10, to our cities for them to disperse. We figured they know their business communities better than we do. The same attitude that I was encouraged to have by Catherine and you all back in the day, that defer to the cities within their own business communities. So we probably have gotten about $7 or $8 million of that total $10 million pot out on the street to small businesses. The grant programs vary city to city. We wanted to, again, be deferential to the city. If they think they should have different ground rules than we, the county, should have, that's fine. Again, we kept $3 million back for our own businesses in unincorporated Washington County, which, like Clackamas, is a considerable part of our business sector. Other categories of expenditures, before we get to BRC, we set up a child care grant program of $4 million, and that is nearly wrapped up. We set up a nonprofit grant program of $5 million, a little over $5 million, and that's getting close to being wrapped up. We also set up a PPE, personal protective equipment program, and so far we put about $500,000 into that. Actually, that's just for the business side. I think the total amount of PPE the county's purchased is probably considerably more than that. But for our small businesses, working with the BRCs, the Business Recovery Centers, we've distributed about $500,000, or on our way to distributing $500,000 of PPE to small businesses. We've also set up some workforce programs, working both with PCC, with Prosperidad, a Latinx-focused small business advocacy organization, and then also with WSI, which is your equivalent of the Clackamas Workforce Partnership. The last category is the BRCs, Business Recovery Centers. So early on, one of our partners, Jonathan Taylor in the city of Tualatin, some of you may know him, he's from the Southeast. I think he's from the Carolinas. And of course, disasters, natural disasters, are an annual occurrence in the Southeast with the hurricanes. And so what he suggested is we should apply the model that they use down in the Southeast, these business recovery centers, which are established even before the hurricane hits. They're getting things ready as a place for where funding opportunities can be accessed by small business, where, you know, vital information is provided, in our case, where PPE is provided. Training to small businesses that are having to pivot to this new reality. Maybe a small Latinx-owned business, they don't even have an online presence. Well, we can help them get that presence. The BRCs are also established, and one of the things I hope that Nancy will talk about is getting the word out about our small grant programs. One of the weaknesses we have in Washington County, and I think John LaGarza said the same thing in Clackamas, we don't have a business license program. And as a result, we don't have a way of reaching our businesses. So our cities have had no problems getting their dollars out on the street. We have in unincorporated Washington County because we don't have an obvious way to reach out to them. In fact, that's one thing we're looking at. But as a result, that means people like Nancy are literally, you know, pounding the pavement, reaching out to these companies, establishing relationships, establishing trust. So that when they get information about this grant program, it's not just out of the blue and that, you know, is this a is a robocall, or no, it's real. The last thing I want to say a little bit about the structure of the BRCs is we wanted these to be dispersed throughout the county. So we actually have four BRCs, one in Tualatin. Again, Jonathan Taylor deserves that. And Tualatin is a great location for South Washington County. One in Beaverton, one in Hillsborough, and then one in Adelante in Forest Grove. And as you may know, Adelante Mujeres is another Latino, Latinx-based CBO, community-based organization. So we're spread around the county. We all four of the BRCs offer services in both English and in Spanish. Other languages are potentially available. I should say, too, about our budget, we have $500,000 for total, and that's to cover the period from June when we started these until December 30th when the CARES Act dollars go away. And so each of the BRCs got $100,000. So they got $50,000 up front in June. They turned in their midterm reports just a couple weeks ago, and then they got their second tranche of $50,000 based on demonstrating all the good work they're doing. And so that's our situation with the BRCs and their funding. One of the things we've been talking about, they're doing a great job. And so after the CARES Act funding goes away, how might we keep these things going? That's all the framework. Actually, I might even stop there and answer questions about generally what the county's doing in the CARES Act. And then I think it'd be great for Nancy to tell her story and the work she's been doing. So I'm happy to take questions about general county stuff and then turn it over to Nancy.
Questions? John, I've got a quick comment. Something that's hitting us locally in Lake Oswego too. I was in a forum the other night and people were asking about our disaster preparedness, both our city and county and state. And I thought from the beginning of the COVID hit that we probably aren't as prepared or organized on the business side of disaster preparedness as we could be. And I kept thinking that our cities or two counties at least should get together and try and fill that chapter in our disaster preparedness plans, that if we have another COVID or some other thing or fire or whatever, we can hit the ground running with the things we learned for our businesses. So down the road, it might be great to get us all together, everybody in this chat and your folks, to do that, because it was a big topic the other night.
You know, I can't agree more. I have heard and read that Oregon, you know, the big one, it's going to come someday. Hopefully I'm gone by then. But and I've read that even relative to other states, we're not prepared, both with regard to business and more generally, when the subduction zone hits or any just a standard earthquake or whatever. I hope that we're all learning from this that, okay, we need to, once we get through this, we need to put our heads together and come up with a better plan. Thank you, John. That's a great comment.
Thank you. No other questions? Let's go to Nancy.
Good morning, everyone. Such a pleasure to join you all today. Thank you for being here and getting to listen to me regarding the BRC. I'm not sure. I think I've only seen one or maybe more than one people that were here yesterday. So I'm sorry if I'm going to sound repetitive again, but I'm going to have to talk about those things again. So BRC, it's Business Recovery Center. We're really glad to be one of the chambers that do have this in-house. The BRC has been truly a great program for our businesses here locally. It has really provided a lot of support that businesses have needed during this crisis mode. As mentioned yesterday, everyone is in crisis right now. Everyone is dealing with this pandemic in different ways, and some more than others are disproportionately suffering regarding this pandemic. So the BRC has been great in different ways. Yesterday, I talked about Foundation in terms of the conversation that I would have regarding the BRC. Foundation is truly important, and what I attribute that to is, and think about when I talk about Foundation for the BRC, has been that the Chamber for a long time has had very key relationships within our city, that being directly with the city of Hillsborough, the county as well, and also with our nonprofit agencies. For example, Centro Cultural, which has been a nonprofit agency that has served the Latinx community for nearly 40 years, Prosperidad, Adelante Mujeres, and Bienestar. Those have been very key for us because not only have they been able to work alongside us through the BRC, However, they have also been able to put out information when we have anything that is viable information for businesses. So they're also a partner with us in that, in terms of sharing information. The other piece in terms of that I did want to really focus on today was the importance of working with your local cities that are part of the BRC area that you cover. That has been key for us, making sure that we're in connection with the economic development director of any city. For us, that's has been Forest Grove, Cornelius, and Hillsborough. We have great relationships with them, and it's truly very important to have them, because as grants come out, they are making sure that they're connecting with you about their community and any areas that they need to focus on that they haven't had a chance to. One of the things that we noticed, and I won't say the city, I don't want to call any names out, but they hadn't had a list of all of the businesses that was current. So this really prompted cities to go out there and make sure that they were covering and had knowledge about all the businesses within their area. So that was something that we were able to help with. And also it's great because it allows for you to learn things that the city maybe didn't know, and you're able to share that so they can also focus on those areas once the BRC is no longer available. So that has been very helpful to cities as well. Some of the things that have been very important for me in the work that I do, and that I think that every BRC at one point or another does, is doing outreach, community outreach. That's really physically going out, leaving your office, and knocking door to door from business to business and getting to know your local business owners. I think the downside to that has been that because, as John mentioned, there is no business license that is required in the unincorporated areas. You're not a friendly face, no matter how friendly you show up. You're not a known face. You're not trusted. And especially within communities like the Asian community, the Latinx business community, those could be hard to get through. So those have been difficult for us. But because, again, I am bicultural, bilingual, some of those areas have been easier for me to break through. But there's some that haven't. And we've had to rely on local partners to make sure that these businesses are getting the information and to continuously show up, not just once every month, because then again, people forget who you are and what you provide and that they can reach out to you when needed. So we've been doing that. Additionally, I have a great assistant that has been helpful during this recovery effort. So we really, again, focus on getting out there about once a week or so. And within that time frame that we are out, we truly just focus on anything that's important or updated information. For some time, you guys know that the mask requirement was changing so quickly that by the time we went out, it was a new mask requirement sign that businesses needed. So that was another thing that we really made sure that businesses were a part of, and that they have the most relevant and current information under state and requirements. So, and although, you know, most people just want English and Spanish signs, we did have other communities that required other languages. And because the state of Oregon does offer those, we were able to do that. And through the BRC, if we've needed to translate that anything, we were able to do so as well. The other piece to that is, you know, rent moratorium has been a huge factor for a lot of these commercial businesses. A lot of people in, again, most marginalized communities underserved were not aware of this information. I have been in situations where people have had to seek out legal assistance regarding rent moratoriums. People just don't understand, even landlords don't understand the law. So that's been very difficult as well for our business owners. But thank goodness, again, we have the BRC to be able to give that information to business owners and help on the legal end as well. So then I think the other piece is, you know, each BRC focuses in a different area. And I one of the things they talked about yesterday is my large frustration over public charge information. That it could affect anyone that is not a not a U.S. citizen and gets some type of public assistance like Section 8 housing, among other things. And so When I came across this issue through our grant in Hillsborough, when people were asking me if this would have an issue with public charge or a conflict. And so I'm not in a position to say yes or no because I didn't know at the time. And there was also the PC issue went through, I forgot what state, but there were some changes. And so that also brought upon more awareness of the changes regarding PC. So at that point, we involved various attorneys as well as our local Congresswoman, Susan Bonamici. She issued a letter out to USCIS. They didn't meet the deadline for a response and later did get a response, didn't provide clarity. So we're still awaiting that information. My piece has been, and that of the chambers as well as the nonprofit organizations that we work alongside with, is that we just provide transparency regarding CARES Act money because we don't know whether or not it could negatively affect someone. So that's something that we have been really working on within our community because it is an area of concern. So like I believe in the last couple of grants that the county has had, they have had a statement regarding the issue regarding public charge. And I am aware, fully aware, that some people may not decide to move forward, but it puts the ball in their court to determine whether or not they can apply or that they should contact an attorney that regarding PC. And I think the other piece, in addition to that, that has also, that I've noticed an issue with, you know, some of these grants are really undersubscribed. And that's, again, you know, they're either one, the PC is an issue. I can say that for Hillsborough was a huge issue. I went from one day not having any appointments until I cleared up the PC issue that the following day for the grant, when the grant opened, I had back-to-back appointments every 30 minutes for 2 days. So that's how important that issue is for our community to really be transparent and let people know about this information. I think the the child care grant was a huge grant. You know, it was $9,999. I think the county did a great job about setting it up. However, you know, some people didn't apply. Again, the PC issue, at least on my end that I saw. But it's still an ongoing conversation that we're having at this moment. The other great part about BRC that I would like to acknowledge has been the PPE accessibility to businesses. That has been great because we have been able to provide masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, disinfectant. I mentioned yesterday that, you know, at one point or another, you couldn't access these things. And if you were, you were going to pay an overprice, like $50 for a Lysol bottle, right? So it's just highway robbery. But businesses were in that situation where when they were state mandated to do these things and they weren't able to because of the lack of supply. So having the access to that has been extremely important for businesses and staying in business and following those rules and regulations by the state. The other PPE has been that they are, when I've been a part of the county meetings, that they are very receptive to the needs. If we see that there's a need for more gloves or that there's something in the aspect from different sectors, that we've been able to have conversations about that so that we can definitely serve the community that we work for. So some other things that I think would be important for others to know as well is that I think that, you know, overall, the BRC is doing a great job. I think one of the biggest things that I'm struggling with nowadays is that we have until the 30th of December that we know that we will be here. And as we see, this pandemic is still very active and alive. And I don't know what that looks like yet. I'm pretty sure John has a better picture of that. But in terms of the work we're doing here, people are starting to ask, what's going to happen after December? Are you guys still going to be here? So I know that we had that conversation with Susan Bonamici in terms of having the conversation of, hey, you know, what happens after December 30th? But I'm not sure at this point what that looks like. And I think just the other thing that's has been a struggle, so that you guys are also aware of, and it's important to advocate for these pieces in our positions, that the information that comes out, that be it from the state or county or city that you you work for, comes out, and it's always mostly focused in English. We have other communities that do not get that same information and that are very much a part of the fabric of our community that get that information at about a week's lag time. And I have been making sure that I've been working with OEM to make sure that that information is comes out at a simultaneous manner. Because again, we see these COVID numbers, and I know with the Latinx community is disproportionately represented in that. So we want to make sure and continuously advocate that this information comes out when any information comes out, especially when we're being called to be a part of the solution. Can't be part of the solution if this information isn't coming out in languages other than English, because there's more people in this community and our cities and counties that just, you know, speak another language. So we want to be inclusive about that. I think just with the ending, I'll end with this, is that I know through the chamber, I know through the city of Hillsborough and through the county of Washington County, diversity, equity, and inclusion has been a major factor about the work that we're producing for our communities. And really thinking about the most marginalized and underrepresented communities when we dole out programs, and making sure that we can truly serve the community at large. Because it's important. Everybody's, again, in survival mode at this point. Trying to get through this pandemic as quickly as possible and being alive after it, because it's truly consuming so many businesses. And the more that we can provide a service in a diverse and in a DEI form, I feel like we're going to be the most successful.
Great. Well, let's open it up for questions. And I have one for John and Nancy in a minute. But William.
Yes, thank you very much for that presentation. Question that I had was, does the BRC have formal relationships with the various chambers that you serve, or is this just sort of a loose partnership?
The answer is yes. They have three chambers, Hillsborough, Tualatin, and Beaverton are operating the BRCs. We have contracts with the county has contracts with all four organizations, the three chambers and Adelante. So this is basically a branch of those three chambers in Adelante. I want to really quickly add to something Nancy said. I think she raised a really important point about funding. CARES Act funding goes away on December 30th. We are looking at how do we keep these things going? As I think everybody in this room knows, you know, it's the challenges of business recovery. You're not going to we're not going to wake up on January 1st and say, well, we're done with that. The other thing, sorry to add a couple more things and interrupt the flow here, but our budget is $500,000. Each BRC got $100,000 each. That adds up. I'm an Italian major, but even I know that that means you have another $100,000 to play with. And so we use that for additional translation services. Each BRC has Spanish language, but we have other translation opportunities. We also, we just entered into a contract with the Small Business Legal Clinic in Lewis and Clark College to provide free legal advice to businesses, as well as have some workshops. So I guess I'm kind of saying, if you look at setting something like this up in Clackamas County, whatever your budget, have some money to address specific opportunities or challenges that might arise after you get these things started. Then I'll shut up.
Great. Other questions?
Yeah. I just want to just jump in. I listened with envy and humility to some degree that Clackamas County didn't get much in the way of any CARES Act funding. We were hoping for this journey through the COVID that the governor would finally relent and give us some kind of population proportional amount of money. That never came, and we're on this reimbursement mode. So I saw a couple of the comments in the chat. I'll respond with one. As far as the assumed business names that are with the Secretary of State, I'll just tell you, I used to subscribe to that list, and it's actually a monthly bundle of assumed business names that are either PO boxes and really aren't brick and mortar. So that's not a viable place. You know, they're not, but what we have discussed with the county was a business license kind of a thing. I always wanted to do that for the purpose of at least having a contact and do that at the minimalist cost, so it wasn't a financial burden for a business to have a you know, another fee or a cost. But we never got there. I can definitely see that it's a good way to get the dollars out there, if there are dollars to put out there. But I just want to just acknowledge that it sounds like a pretty good system. I learned a lot. I really appreciate the presentation from both Nancy and John this morning. So thank you for that, and I'll stop there.
Well, I would add, because John, you sent me a note in the chat room too, is I think we're all lagging behind on our inventory of businesses, and Lake Oswego's got the same thing. We have a business license, but not everybody either knows about it, or they know about it and they don't want to pay the $80 or $70, so we don't really have a good record. Lynn Wallace has been helpful in trying to get us organized on our list of businesses, but if we could figure that out, how do we inventory as many, if not all, businesses in one location and then be able to reach out to them in a time of trouble? That would be great. Because is there any knowledge maybe from just Hillsborough? Where's Nancy on the screen there? Nancy, from Hillsborough, that would say 50% of our people are in the business license program, or 25% or 90%. Is there any number that you would know of how many are signed up?
I don't know if they know a number, but I think the number that they – I think of, like, I've heard of 8,000 being registered businesses, but don't quote me on that. I think that's what I've heard.
Yeah, and then you don't know what the total is, but that's a good point. We got to work on that too globally, I think. Other questions for Nancy?
John. Yeah. John, real quick, and Nancy can speak to this, but we actually, Metro has a list of businesses. I gather they don't have email addresses. I don't know if that's more reliable than an individual city's business license thing, but Nancy, do you know what their source is? And is it, you know, 90% instead of 50%, or?
You know, I'm not sure. I just got privy to that information on Friday. I know that Bart is working on it. I was just glad that, you know, that we were able to get that, because I'm hoping that once he's working on it and will identify some of the areas that we need to focus on. So it'd be a great idea to connect with Bart to see if he can identify those, because it would be very helpful. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times that I've sat down with people during grant process and didn't have a business license or their business registered. So we had to go through that process. And EIN at this point is lagging, so it makes things much more difficult when you're trying to apply for any type of grant as well. So it's extremely important to identify how to resolve that issue.
Others? Questions, answers, suggestions?
I would just add, John, or to the group, that as a previous as an employer, you know, and filing taxes and payroll taxes, you know, whether it's TriMet tax or it's the Oregon tax, it seems to me that the, and maybe Lynn can add to this, that the employment department could be a resource for knowing the addresses of the employers without revealing, you know, the privacy issues with the employees per se. So that ought to be a viable source. I mean, if you don't have any employees, that won't tag a business, but if you do have, and you have an EIN, and employer identification number, that would be a means to tap that resource. I'm sure maybe that's what Metro maybe has done. I don't know.
Let me just respond to that, Paul. By law, we are allowed now, because there's say 5 years ago, the legislature let us do one more thing that we couldn't do with our confidential information. And we're now allowed to give a list of business names associated with their NAICS codes, but that's it. We cannot give addresses, and we cannot give anything else. It's illegal. We are by law forbidden to do that. But at least it's possible to get a list of business names, and then by their associated NAICS codes, you can tell what type of business it is.
Okay, Laura, looks like you got something. No?
Yep. I do. I have a question. So in yesterday's presentation that we heard
from this team, which was fantastic. So thank you both to John and Nancy. So Nancy, real quick, because when we talked, I think you indicated yesterday that there was a lot of field work done in order to go do the outreach. So how many pairs of boots on the ground did you guys have to be able to go door knocking out into the communities and the rural areas? Because this to me, and we've been listening to this, we've been looking at this, because I'm following the other chambers that have been doing this and talking to those executive CEOs. And this has been a true labor of love. So how many people did it actually take to go out there and get to know those outlying businesses and really start doing making those connections? Because to me, this seems like it's a very large group of people that this would be required of to do this work.
Actually, it's not. Okay. Each BRC has about 2 to 3 people, to include possibly an assistant. We have an assistant as well. So that's been helpful. But in terms of the work here in Hillsboro, for this site, it has been myself and our assistant. And when we go out, it could be all day. And that's all we do, is all day, door to door, from city to city, to town. You know, that's really what we're doing. And I also, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I did forget that piece, you know, that we are really, you know, you talk about labor of love, we are meeting people where they're at. That is important for this court. Mm-hmm. That means, you know, that you are serving people the way they need the service. And to that, some of us think that social media is the best way. That sometimes doesn't work. That means that you have to walk into a bar and leave your cards and a flyer. And get to know who works at that bar, you know, and then also walking into a laundromat and leaving a flyer, going into banks and using their community board. So those are other ways that have been very important in terms of the work we do, because a lot of these people, you're in rural parts of Oregon, your service to internet might not be the best. So you are learning this information from other people. So that's why it's important, as I said, that the foundation, collaboration with your partners is key, because they are truly going to allow you to be successful in the work that you are doing. And if you haven't had a relationship or that foundation established, get to know people. They are, you know, more than willing to help in this time. One of the areas that we hadn't focused in the work with the chamber was within the Asian community and the Black community. So working, you know, across boundaries and making sure that we are giving that information to people. Everybody's willing to help right now and to establish relationships to make sure that our communities are being served as they are being needed to be served.
Okay. So clarity too, because I want everybody to kind of get their head around this. From what, like I said, I've talked to the chamber executives about this program and learn more, but I want the people on the line, because to understand the complexities in developing the relationships and the length of time that it will take in order to gain that trust or to be able to do that outreach, and it is a full-time job for at least two people, right, in a certain area, a part of a region. And so that in itself is understanding how the partnerships, how that can work, but also what's going to be required and that cost that's going to be associated to be able to do, like, the hiring that would be required or the staff coverage that would be required for that. So it in itself is adds some complexity. It's doable and it's completely manageable because it's successful, clearly, from you guys and the rest of the partners. But this could be an amazing program for our county. It would be, you know, but the funding too is a concern I have. So that I just wanted to, for clarity, because I love the way you recited yesterday the pros and cons. Yeah. And it was very, very detailed. So thank you for that. But also I would ask clarity. You mentioned yesterday the U.S. citizenship, the public charge and the U.S. citizenship and the complexities around that. Can you be a little bit clearer on that and what the downfall for the Latinx community, what that would mean to them?
And just to clarify, because I think it is important, you know, it's not just the Latinx community. There's immigrants across different ethnic groups and races. So it's not just the Latinx community. It's anyone who is undocumented in the United States. So with that said, you know, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm not an attorney, but the issue came about because I say Latinx because that's my focus in Hillsborough, but with BRC, I work with everyone. And so this really came out of working with the Latinx business community as they asked me if applying for these funds would affect them adversely on their pathway to citizenship. And again, I'm not too well versed with the changes regarding the 729 date, and also very recently, because I rechecked this, I think it was September, maybe 13th, there was another change as well. So that information is reflecting just more issues regarding public charge. Well, it's PC in itself is complex, and some people are just wondering, you know, again, does this affect me? And with that said, because I didn't know the answer, what I did was connect with our local attorneys that we have in the chamber that are members and started asking these questions. And what they had said to me was that there is no clear answer. And then I started asking, so, you know, what can we do to make sure, one, that we are protecting those people that are on their pathway to citizenship, and that, again, the two-part to that would be that we're not giving information, saying yes or no, and truly not knowing the answer. So the thought about a disclaimer came about. And so I have been really pushing for a disclaimer because, again, that informs the applicant that we're not aware of that. That we have gone so far as involving local elected officials to work on that issue for us. So there is a team working on that to get information. So I think it would just be important to identify that. And then also I'll tell you the cons to that conversation, that because I have been privy to it, there's so much misleading information. We all have a different understanding of something. Sometimes you take on the role and, you know, you make a comment based on information you understood and things change. And that for me has been difficult because I'm not willing to sacrifice anybody for $3,000 and their well-being and their potential in this country. Because if you have a business, $3,000 is probably going to do you good for rent. And so people are really trying to find other solutions. And I would rather more so be transparent about that information than adversely affecting anyone on their pathway to citizenship. So I don't know if that answered your question, but truly I would really, we have a letter that if you would like me to share from Susan Bonamici out to USCIS office, and then just some other information from attorneys that have worked on this piece as well. Again, it's just to protect community. And on the other piece of that is that I am a part of the Oregon Latinx Leaders Network, and there is a focus on asking at one point or another. I am drafting a letter at this point for the governor's office to ask for a certain amount of money for these undocumented business owners. So we are really working on that piece. I don't know how long that'll take, but it is a piece that we are working on.
Great. John, you want to add in there? John Southgate? Yeah,
just want to pick up on something Laura said. As part of the midterm reports that each of the four BRCs turned in end of August, we required that they, at a high level, summarize how they've spent their dollars so far. And I could get the specific number. In fact, you have those reports. Karina forwarded them. But I think that the by far the biggest line item, to Laura's point, is staffing, the payroll costs, to have all these, you know, people like Nancy out on the street. The other thing, maybe stating the obvious, but we made a very intentional decision to work with our chambers, as well as Adelante, which is a CBO, to be our partners in the BRCs. We did not want to try to go through a two-month process to set something new up out of whole cloth. We say, hey, the chambers already do this. They have these relationships with these businesses. They know how to work with small businesses and provide a suite of services. So And that is not to say that we're just merely paying down, backfilling their budget. Each of these organizations has hired new staff and incurred other costs. So which is to say, it's a legitimate use of the CARES Act dollars. But keep talking to Laura as you go forward in this conversation and in the other chamber.
I would quickly add on Laura's point about the staffing. A question for Nancy and John was also, can you just briefly talk about any advertising on social media or anywhere just to say these programs are there? I keep thinking of two or three people in Hillsborough for that whole big city plus our big counties. What are we doing for advertising to get the word out about the BRC?
So I know that every BRC, we have the brand manager here that works on that. She does an amazing job regarding that information. She is definitely, we have a chimp mail that she is also getting information out to anybody that subscribes to that newsletter. And every time people are coming in for PPE, we express the importance of making sure that you get on that newsletter. Anything that comes in for grants, anything that has to do with business during COVID and it's going to support you, business owners have that information available to them. We're definitely using social media, Facebook, and I know that Paplin Media has also been a part of the work we're doing. So we're definitely covering those bases on the work that Jen has been focused on. I would say that, you know, the other piece that we've talked about in these meetings, that word of mouth has been huge. And I think that's, you know, attributed from the door to door. You get to know people. The people I get before me and are calling me is because I have come out and talked to them, and then they shared information with friends. And so, you know, that's another piece that has been very helpful as well for us.
Right. We talked about this yesterday. We also, like you, Washington County has a EOC, Emergency Operations Center. And initially they had, you know, their website and a call-in number for specifically for businesses. And early on they realized this is just duplication. So that's another way that people learn about the BRCs is if a small business calls the county and say, hey, where do I get PPE or whatever, they just get transferred straight through to the BRCs to get that information. So it actually, I think these BRCs, first of all, it's not our money, it's CARES Act dollars, but they're saving the county, I'd say, a fair amount of staff time because of that.
Great. Okay, I have Sarah first and then Lynn. Sarah?
Good morning. I just wanted to put it out there. It's probably something you're thinking about, and if I missed anything and redundant, let me know. But so as Commissioner Savas mentioned, we do have only a reimbursement basis on CARES Act funding, but we are working with county leadership to dedicate some dollars and exploring the possibility of these BRCs in the county. And so I did want to make that this clarification to the group, you know, because we do see this good work going on. And there's multiple places, like Mr. Southgate just mentioned, the EOC, our Emergency Operations Center, is working with businesses. Our Economic Development Team is working with businesses, and others are as well. And so we do see it as an efficient way and a place for us to go. And we do have some time constraints, of course, given that it's almost the end of September and the December 30th deadline was mentioned. So we're hopeful to be able to get something going, but we want to keep you all in the loop and ask for your support in doing that as we go forward too. So appreciate this opportunity today.
Great. Lynn?
I was just wondering, as you're working with businesses, besides information on applying for grants, what are some of the things that businesses are asking for as far as services and help?
I think it varies. It truly varies. One of the things that we also have through the BRC is consultants that offer marketing and branding, advertising support, as well as legal services. Again, it just varies. I think, like, for Hillsborough, the biggest issue has been the registry, either to the state or a business license. So the services just tend to be different, but I think that in a way that I could better have an answer for you would to be to look at our report again. But I think the other part to that is that we do have varying sectors that get more services than others. So I think that's another area that we need to cover as well, that I'm hoping that Bart will be able to help us with once he analyzes all the information he's received from Metro. I hope that answers your question.
Okay, Paul.
Yeah, I got a question. This came to mind for our Washington County guest, and that is, are you hearing the same cry for yearning to get into phase two on this COVID thing?
I sure am, but Nancy, what are you hearing on the street?
We certainly are. Everybody wants to get to phase two, and everybody knows the importance of that. I think, you know, what has been helpful for our area is that we have the relationship with Centro Cultural, with Virginia Garcia, you know, that is doing the groundwork with our essential workers, and letting them know the importance of the rules and regulations regarding COVID, especially when you're entering a place of business. So we hear the cries. We know everybody wants to move to phase two. And, you know, you often hear that, again, that changes in terms of that information. For some point, you know, we were going to go to phase two with that being just Washington County. And then we had to do the wait on Multnomah, and I believe Clackamas as well. So that's everybody wants that. And with that said, you know, we're just planning on what we can do for now and problem solving at where we're at now. And I know the cities and county have done a great job regarding that. They've expanded, you know, different areas of their cities to allow you to have outdoor seating for restaurants. So they're really accommodating the phase we're at in some areas. But yes, you know, we're waiting for phase two. And we know that that might take some time, but we're also making sure that we are being accommodating as much as we can be.
Yeah, right. The reason I asked that in particular is that a lot of the businesses had to, you know, PPE or protections that are built, all those improvements that you all spoke about earlier, you helped with that CARES Act funding. Our businesses did that on the presumption that, number one, either they were waiting or relying on phase two prior to the governor lumping us all together and hitching us to that same boat. But we just took a double, triple hit between. Clackamas County businesses have probably suffered more so, and the disparity. I mean, just think about the disparity. I mean, I just have an upset with the governor in this regard, as far as not giving us a fair shot at that CARES Act money, and just put our Clackamas County businesses in a tough spot. And then when they invested the money in phase two, thinking it was around the corner, and our numbers were better than Marion County, which was allowed to go in phase two, that then they're left holding the bag for improvements they made, and they can't even open. They can't even function because of they were not in phase two. So it was a stranded investment on their part.
Yeah, my sense, Commissioner Savas, I really appreciate your comments there. My sense is that businesses, you know, they've been limping along. They got a little bit of money from us or from EIDL loan or whatever, and so they're still alive. And if they don't come back soon, you know, it's not going to be 2020 was a bad year. It's going to be 2020 is the year that our business died. I'm really worried that, you know, it's been like that, and it's going to really plummet if we don't. I'm convinced we need to reopen it. That even the health costs, health risks of staying, remaining reopen, I think we need to move forward. I believe that. And I don't mean to sound insensitive. I have friends who have relatives who've been hit with this. I don't take it lightly, but there's a real cost in human suffering to continuing what we're doing.
Okay, John LaGarza, I think we may be at the end of that presentation. And Nancy and John, that was fantastic. It was a great, good, constructive, nuts and bolts presentation. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, you guys. Have a great day. Take care.
And John, what else? Are we wrapping up or?
That was great feedback, and really appreciate, you know, getting Laura Edmonds giving us some feedback. And like Sarah had talked about, staff's exploring the feasibility of, you know, what the funding would look like and geographically what partners we could partner with, and, you know, report back to leadership and to the board here. And, you know, again, understanding that we're general fund through that and then have to go through the reimbursement phase of that. But really with some vital feedback, and really appreciate that there. So the next thing is we are getting, we have one more EDC meeting, Chair Lamont, and it's been an interesting Zoom year of meetings, and we have to, staff has to work on getting a final report pulled together. And so staff would like to know from the, you know, the chair and the committee here, what they feel is important to be reporting out in the final report this year. And so we'd open up to love to get some feedback on that and thoughts from everyone.
We're going to just do a quick brainstorm. So any ideas as of all you've heard this year, you've been involved in, what we think is something we want to bring to the county board with our summary of the year. Any thoughts, ideas, issues? Jeff Goodman is consulting with his cat.
Well, it seems to me, John, is that the centerpiece of 2020 is definitely COVID, and in some respect, our hands have been tied by what we would like to have done. We started off the year with all great intentions for working towards better childcare provisions and so on. With all the good intentions in the world, COVID has really slapped us down. The fires on top of that need to have a special reference. But other than information sharing, I don't know that we have, you know, that we have been able to activate any programs this year.
Good point. I think one that keeps sticking with me, which is William's hitting on it, is our preparedness and seeing if in 2021 we could encourage the county board to pick up on the emergency operations plans, knowing we're going into an actual emergency operations plan for recovery. But after that, how do we fill the gaps of each city and unincorporated area to be ahead of the game for business, for economic development? It's never going to get down to the fine grain, but boy, we could be ahead, including what happens if we get fires within the county. And even I had a senior citizen the other day ask me about what to do if we had to go into a level where we're leaving the city or the county. Where do we go? What street do we take? What route do we take? So maybe there's a business emergency operations thing after we get the bigger picture done. And next year, later this year and next year, we are going to participate with Greater Portland Inc. on the more global plan for economic development, obviously with recovery influence, and then directly with our county EOC staff, as you all know. So that was just a thought I had, and we can put that on the list to discuss. Other thoughts? Shannon.
Yeah, I would like to see more discussion on equity and what the county is doing to encourage minority-owned businesses, even representation on this wonderful group, encouraging more diversity in this group as well as other representation.
Okay. Any others? Jody and Stacia, you're our newest members. You're coming in with fresh eyes. Probably haven't seen many of the presentations, even though I think you've been tracking us. Is there anything you think we should get on the radar screen for the commissioners, the Board of Commissioners?
No, I think you guys have hit the nail on the head with the items that you've already mentioned. I think maybe, you know, if we add a little bit more about the work you guys have been doing around transportation, that would be good as well.
Okay. All right. And then I have another one, which is one of my favorite subjects, and I know it's Wilda's and others, is the McLaughlin Boulevard. We want to make sure we still keep pushing for something there next year. We got a gap in the discussion with COVID, but I think we need to revitalize that discussion.
It's important also, John, for us to be aware that even if magically the coronavirus just went away, even if everything, you know, cleared up, there is still going to be massive recovery work needed for rehiring all of the people that lost their jobs, for retraining with a different attitude towards is telecommuting still an option? Some people say yes, some people say no, but I think that we can't we can't just assume that as soon as we get the all clear from COVID, that things are going to be back to normal. They aren't. We have changed the economic platform of the world, and it's not going back.
Okay.
Hey, Chair Lamont, one more thing I thought about you might want to highlight in the report is the great work that Vance and Wilda and a few others did on the bylaws. So making reference to that in the report and the status of where that might be helpful.
Okay, great.
Okay. I wish I could give a quick report from Oregon City if I could.
Sure.
When you're finished with this other topic.
If there's no other issues or opportunities for us to hone in, and we'll get some report going for the EDC. Jody.
I agree. I think you guys are spot on with everything you've been talking about. When it comes to the diversity piece, I think that is really has to be addressed, but there's a lot of organizations, ours, many others that I've talked to on a daily basis. So as we move forward with that, really making sure that everybody has the support that they need to get that. Like I've had organizations calling me and asking me, can you connect me with someone to help me transcribe all of our paperwork into Spanish speaking, and a lot of them don't have the funds to do that. So making sure we're all connecting each other with the means to truly diversify and have the documents, have everything they need to be able to reach out to the different cultures and communities in those ways. And just, I know we are already thinking very forward thinking at looking at what is it going to look like for everybody that has lost their homes to now have to rebuild and remodel. And, you know, how can we help in some way try to streamline some of those processes so they don't get any more caught up in red tape than is necessary as they do clean up, as they try to rebuild. So those are, you know, there's a lot of challenges ahead for these communities and individuals to recover all that.
Well, Jody, thank you. I mean, to me, that's recovery job 101, the rebuilding someone's home and their business. So we gotta look at that.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a hard thing that comes to workforce development because we're already so short on trades that we are now going to be really taxed to try to get all those homes rebuilt.
Okay.
Yeah. If
nobody else will. Nope. William, you want to give us a little OCO update?
Yeah, I'm going to tag on Jody's comment about red tape and be aware that there are two commissioner positions open in Oregon City. The incumbents are both running, and there are some people that would like to see a little less red tape that are running against them. So that's one red flag for anybody in Oregon City. The other thing is yesterday, Oregon City Business Alliance had our forum. I appreciate Commissioner Savas was there, but there's a lot going on in the north end of Oregon City. There's hotels being built. There's food carts being planned. There's park development. There's, of course, the West Outfall Project. There is just a lot going on, and almost all of it is in the north end of Oregon City. So we'll have that that recording is being edited right now and being put up on the OCBA's YouTube channel. So I'd encourage you, if you want to know what's going on in Oregon City, that'd be a good place to stop by. Lynn, were you at that meeting yesterday? You often come to those.
No, I was knee deep in data.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's fine. That's all I had, John.
All right, John LaGarza and Cindy and Sarah, wherever Sarah went to, everything good so far? We're good?
We're good, Chair Lamont. That's that includes the meeting there.
Well, I would like to – Commissioner Humberson.
I just wanted to make a comment to Shannon and her interest in equity, diversity, and inclusion issues with respect to the business community. Please contact our executive director. We hired a new one for equity, diversity, and inclusion that will include outreach into the community, not just internal. And that should be part of that program. And we staffed that office with some help also. So please reach out, and hopefully we can work together on that. And I'll remind people that the C2P2 program, which is an apprenticeship program designed to include women and minorities in the trades, apprentice programs, et cetera, is something that the county is working on and that the region is working on through Metro. So there's going to be some opportunities there to expand the workforce and the training opportunities for the minority community and women, as well as for everyone else.
Great. On that note, we'll end it. And I just want to say that this month's backdrop award is a tie between William Gifford and Ken Hubbardson. Ken's got an interesting display going on the wall there, so we want to make sure he's in the tie. So that's how the voting's going this month. Everybody stay safe, and we'll see you next month.
Happy fall. Happy fall.